Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your owl post for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the phenomenal Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm doing very well. You know, as we're actually recording this, it's a Friday. We don't normally record on Fridays, but it's great, you know? I mean, you know, Friday after work, no obligations, it's fantastic.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have obligations because, well,
I have a kid,
but
yeah,
but yeah, being able to check the weekend box or do what a friend of mine says, and I get to, like, that's not weekend Andrea's problem. So
there you go. Well, yeah. As we're recording too, people will know that we did miss a week, but you know what? Life happens. So we're back, but we wanted to say thank you. We had a brand new 5-star review. Even though, Drea, we had not put out an episode, somebody gave us a 5-star review, and it's Zare1996, and they said, like many, I've read the series too many times to count. Every time I read, it's only through my own perspective, and I didn't really realize that until I listened to this podcast. Two great, genuine hosts, and it's so nice to get to enjoy the series through their perspective and get a whole new take on the meanings and the character motivations. I finally can enjoy being stuck in traffic, at least a bit. Thank you for all of your hard work. Well, they gave us 5 stars, and I really, really appreciate that. You know, anything we can do to help your traffic pain.
Definitely. I am so grateful that I've made someone's terrible bouts of traffic a little bit easier, because I too know that pain, very much so. So I'm glad to hear that it made it just a little bit less painful.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for listening to and giving us your 5-star review. You know, we encourage you, if you like our show, please help us out with a review and a rating over there on Apple Podcasts and iTunes. It does help people find the show. There are a lot of podcasts out there that are Harry Potter related. So if you think we're good, let people know what you think, and so they'll find the show. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts, and wherever you're doing that, make sure you're subscribed. That way you will get the show as soon as we drop the new episodes. You can also find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. You can find us online at TheNerdParty.com. And if you would like to send us an email, Dre and I love getting emails. So go to TheNerdParty.com/contact. Please choose Owlpost, and then you can write us an email, and that'll send it to us, and we'll get to talk to you that way. So we're at chapter 19. We've got the lion and the serpent. And, you know, I really appreciate the beginning of this chapter, because we get this feeling of, again, there's these moments of joy that come in this book. And one of them here is the fact that Harry just feels like he's carrying around this special, like, fire, like St. Elmo's fire in his chest, that she can't take away because they're fighting back. You know, they're meeting for their defense against the dark arts training with the rest of the kids who want to be a part of Dumbledore's army. And Harry is carrying around these memories of how the kids are growing and learning, like Colin Creevy and Pavarotti and Neville, and it just is giving him something that is keeping him going, especially since it's been very difficult to, you know, keep his temper in this time period. And this is giving him the impetus to be able to do that. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I really enjoy the fact that he is getting a little bit of, I want to say, like, joy out of the fact that he's doing exactly what they don't want him to do.
Yeah.
He's getting, you know, he says at some point, like, it's, you know, they're fighting back in the exact way that the ministry is afraid of. And he gets this, like, surge of pride about that. And I just think that's so funny and so true, like, of teenage angst. And I think we all feel that way sometimes, right? Like, the ridiculous, if someone has this ridiculous fear, you're sort of like feeling a little vindicated when you can, you know, manifest that and be like, you're ridiculous. So I do really appreciate that. And I love that here at the very beginning of the chapter, we get Hermione figuring out a way to schedule their meetings. And she uses a galleon and puts a protean charm on them. And she's telling everyone her idea, and they all look like perturbed. And she's like, oh, it must be a bad idea. Did you guys want to do something else? And they're just really, it comes down to the fact that they're all just super jealous that they can't do this like Newt level charm as well. And I just find that so funny.
It's one of those moments where Hermione just surprises us again with how smart she really is and how clever a wizard she is, you know, and, you know, it's nice to see all of that reading really come out, you know, out to play, you know, that not only can she read about spells, but she can do them as well. And what's also kind of funny is how, you know, the idea that she got the idea from the Death Eaters.
And yeah, and how clever it is for her to do that.
Yes, yes, and and I love.
Sorry, that. I took the thunder out of your beat that time.
I absolutely 100% agree. Just like I thought it was. It's again, it's a Hermione is just kind of blowing your mind with how smart she is, and I love how Harry's like, "Well, this is great, you know," and she's like, "Yeah, it's better than you know having you know." Metal burn your skin, and Harry's like, yeah, I like your way better. You know, but it is such a smart thing because this way, you know, if anybody checks their pockets, all they're going to see is a normal galleon, and so they can continue their meetings. And also the thing that they also realize here at the beginning as well is that it's better to have the meetings at different times during the week anyway, because if anybody's kind of following them, it makes it much more difficult for them to piece together than them, you know, meeting the same time every week at the same place, which that would be pretty sketch.
Right. And then the coin allows them to kind of coordinate this without having to be seen dashing across the hall and trying to find each other and creating, you know, like a social connection. They're really able to be somewhat discreet in their organization.
Well, and it was interesting because they were talking about, you know, this makes it better because it you get this picture here that the houses don't mix a ton. And so this is another thing that this book is showing is how this group specifically is creating a organization which is changing Hogwarts the exact same way that the Sorting Hat wanted them to change Hogwarts, which is to work together to cross those lines. And this is what the ministry is worried about, is people coming together across lines. And these kids are doing that right now. And it's going to be something that is going to play out through the rest of the series. We're going to see this, and we're going to see the impact that it has. And it is really cool that not only are they defying Umbridge, but they are doing the very thing that Voldemort himself would fear the most, is people coming together.
And it even sort of is deepened by just sort of this, I don't know, cursory conversation about, you know, Terry Boot being upset that Hermione's not in Ravenclaw. Like, why are you not in Ravenclaw with brains like that? And it's almost like he's offended that they didn't get the best talent, you know? And she's like, oh, you know, I considered it. And then it chose Gryffindor, but it doesn't matter. And she's like, sort of just brushed it off and was like, it doesn't matter. We're all here now. Like, let's just move on. And it's not done in like a, she's afraid of anything. She just doesn't honestly care. She's like, whatever, it's fine. And just sort of deepens that you don't need to worry about what house you're in, because we're all working together anyway. So whether I'm a Ravenclaw or a Gryffindor, you know, Hermione's there to help everyone in every house. So it's kind of just this subtle reinforcement of that idea that gets conveyed there at the very beginning of the chapter as well.
I love how we, you know, transition into the fact that this is the Quidditch chapter here, Slytherin versus Gryffindor, and McGonagall not giving them homework that weekend because she's like, And she even stops Ron and Harry. I've gotten accustomed to having that trophy in my office. I'd like to keep it that way.
I'd like to not hand it over to Snape.
It's just so funny. Like, there are those moments where, you know, I just really love McGonagall, and this is one of them, the fact that she's such an she's so enthusiastically supportive of Quidditch, and, you know, there's a real pride in that for her, and I thought that that was really funny. So this chapter, though, you know, a majority of it is getting ready for Quidditch and then the Quidditch game itself and the aftermath of the Quidditch game. And so I really like that, you know, as we're getting ready for the game, the day of the game, Ron is just like, he's crapping his pants. You know, he is so worried about this. And one of the best moments is when Luna Lovegood comes over with, got to be the coolest sports-related hat ever.
It is a pretty, pretty cool trinket that she has here.
I mean, a massive lion hat that can actually roar is pretty sweet. I mean, you know, I don't know where I would use one in real life, but I kind of want one.
Liar, you would wear it like every day.
Yeah, I just wear it. I just want to become like a Detroit Lions fan just so I could go to their games.
And wear the hat.
Wear the hat. Be so awesome, right? But I mean, this is another moment too, like where we do see people supporting Gryffindor over Slytherin. And, you know, that's something that we've kind of seen before. The other houses really don't like Slytherin, but to have such an overt symbol of people, you know, from other houses supporting Gryffindor, I think is very interesting here. And it kind of gives an idea of, you know, what's going on at the school where the Slytherins are kind of continually being pushed aside by everyone else because of what they represent. And, you know,
well, and they're doing it to themselves as well, right? Like, mm-hmm. They are being pushed aside by others mostly because they're alienating themselves based on their attitude and their approach to everything. I mean, this chapter alone sort of points the difference between being a good sport and being a spoil sport. And so it's not even so much that, you know, it's that they don't like Slytherin. It's they don't like the way that this is being handled and this attitude that is being brought to the table, which is sort of a manifestation of what I always imagined the original founder's relationship was like, right? That Salazar Slytherin sort of alienated himself based on his ideals and the other three stuck together.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it was because those ideals were something that created, you know, alienation. They automatically put people into boxes to which would segregate. And that's exactly, even though they were put into houses here, I'm pretty sure that the thought process behind that was, let's foster the gifts that you know, been given in life, whereas his became much more about, and I think we've talked about this in a previous episode, so much more about the things that aren't gifts, they're just out of your control, you know? It's like being born a girl or a boy or white or black or, you know, all the things you can't change, you know? So I think that's just really interesting.
Well, and the reason for the division originally isn't so much, and I never took it as something that was meant to segregate, but it was meant to, I felt like, cater the experience mm-hmm. to those like you and to provide a place of acceptance, you know, and that sort of thing, and to align and share, you know, the struggles of people of that thought process are more alike. So, like, if you take into account smart people, they're going to experience things differently and they're going to need, you know, guidance in a very specific way. So I feel like the reason that they divided makes sense, but I think in some cases it just gets extreme, and I feel like that's what happens with the Slytherin group, is that it's no longer just about, or now it's about someone being better than someone else.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, one of the things I always enjoy about the Quidditch chapters is Lee's commentary, and I love him talking about Johnson, and he's like, I've been saying it for years. She's great. She still won't go out with me. And I just love Professor McGonagall yelling at him like, Jordan. He's like, it's just a fun fact.
It makes it more fun. We're just providing fun facts.
It's so great.
I do.
Oh my gosh.
I did really love that. And I do love that the way they do it too is he's like, she's a great player. I've been saying so for years. You know, you can just like hear it come through in this like super old timey, like, announcer voice. You know, I think the casting they did mm-hmm. in the movie, they do a really good job with yeah, this character
they
and
did.
Getting that like personality through. It's so much fun.
I heartily agree with you. You know, I think that is one of the things for the most part that the movie did fantastically, and is casting just about everybody in their roles. And yeah, they did find somebody who just really, he was so much like Lee Jordan. You know, he had that kind of boisterous, vivacious personality, but also you got the feeling like he wasn't afraid to bend the rules when he needed to, when he was trying to, you know, ask out Angelina. So, you know, I get it. take your shots where you got it, you know, right?
Well, and he knows how to kind of like, I don't know, you don't get the Angelina in the books specifically. It's not really depicted as super feminine, right? You don't get this like, she's not a dainty lady. She's very assertive. You know, she has all these elements that most people would find not attractive. So mm-hmm. to take someone like Lee Jordan and be like, I've been asking her out for a while, is just so adorable. And it just speaks to like, he values her as a player, and he values all those things that make her a great player, which is why he wants to go out with her, which is just a unique spin on what you normally get from teenagers who are like, I ask out the pretty girl, or I ask out the popular girl, right? He's just like, I ask out the boss girl, like she's a boss.
Well, I mean, you know, who wouldn't want to, you know, great Quidditch player and somebody who can take care of herself, you know, he's got excellent taste. So,
yes, agreed. I'd ask out Angelina.
I'm not going to lie. Who wouldn't? Well, you know, Jenny. But anyway, that's beyond the point.
Maybe they'd be a power couple, man.
It's true.
That would make
true.
A pretty great power couple.
Jenny,
right there.
Jenny is also very much like Angelina in that sense. She is no nonsense growing up with all those brothers. She can take care of herself. So
yep, exactly.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely,
I don't think
right.
Malfoy would ask her out. Let's put, we can go with that one.
Oh, Malfoy couldn't handle that. Mm-mm.
No.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Boy needs somebody docile. That's all. I mean, he couldn't handle. Yeah. So anyway, we're way off track.
Moving on.
Moving
we've totally
on.
Digressed here.
We get to the point.
We're shipping all the tertiary characters.
Goodness. So much fun, though, to be able to do. Because that's what you get to do when you do this podcast. So we've got Lee who's doing the announcing, and then we hear the Slytherin stands singing a song about Ron Weasley. And it is not a very nice song. And they keep singing it louder and louder. And the louder they get, the worse Ron begins to play. And all Harry knows is that the only way to save his friend and the team is for him to catch the snitch. Which he is luckily able to do. And unfortunately, though, that doesn't end the hostilities, because once they get to the ground, it just gets worse.
Yeah, it gets to be really ugly and really fast. And, you know, we find that Madame Hooch is distracted because of... So Harry catches the snitch, but only barely, as he gets hit illegally by a bludger. So what I learned here is you're not allowed to like target the seeker with the bludger.
Well, at least after he's caught it, because if I remember correctly, as reading this, that he got targeted after he had already caught it, and so that was sure. That was the foul, basically. That was what you're not allowed to do.
Okay, that makes sense. Either way, he did something he's not supposed to do. And, you know, Madame Hooch is chastising him. And in the meantime, Malfoy is, you know, berating Ron and then moves on to all of the Weasleys and then moves on to Harry. And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. You know, they're literally describing it as having to hold back the twins, like multiple people are holding back Fred and George, including Harry. And I love the moment where he starts taunting Harry and the way she describes it as he doesn't remember letting go of George. But the next thing he knows, they're charging up to Malfoy.
Well, and it's just nasty. I mean, he's talking about how they wanted to add, you know, voice, other verses about, you know, their mother. And then not only is he talking about Ron's mother, but he starts talking about Harry's mother. And that's the last straw.
That's when Harry just can't take it anymore.
That's right. Which, you know, it makes sense. And so it starts a brawl, which it's broken up by Madam Hooch, you know, who makes them go specifically straight to McGonagall. And McGonagall is furious, of course, because, you know, this just means that they're going to get into trouble. And she's worried, of course, what Umbridge is going to do. And of course, who should show up but Miss herself.
God, it makes my skin crawl when I hear that.
As it should.
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, basically, they gave her a reason to... They gave Umbridge every reason she needed to do exactly what she wanted to do in the first place. And I love McGonagall's reaction when she's like, oh, I have a, you know, basically says something about like having another decree. And she's like, another one? Like, you can hear the annoyance in her voice already. But yeah, it allows her to basically choose punishment however she chooses.
Well, yeah. I mean, so this new decree, you know, and it was because of an earlier conversation with Minerva that she gets this new decree added so that, yes, she is the one who can be the arbiter of punishment. And the punishment that she has for Fred, George, and Harry is that she's banning them forever at Quidditch at Hogwarts, which is interesting because...
Fred didn't actually engage in the fight, but she banned him for life anyway.
Yes.
With this assumption of if they hadn't held him back, then he would have. So she punished him for an assumption of his behavior versus what he actually did.
Which, oh my gosh, I mean, she just goes full on basically Nazi here. Cannot stand her in this. Like, she's making herself worse and worse. And it's so frustrating because Angelina, of course, is furious with him. And then, you know, Ron is telling Harry, he's like, I'm so sorry. I've got to quit. I got to resign. And Harry's like, dude, if you resign, there are only three people left on the team. And he's like, what? So he tells...
And then he tells them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're like, look, stop blaming yourself for everything. It's bad enough what's happened. And I really do love that the chapter ends with Hermione being like, look, I know it's awful, but I do have a way to cheer you guys up. Hagrid's back.
I do. I do love the positive note on which this ends. You feel a little slightly better about life after that. It's a rough chapter. I had a hard time making through it just because of I just don't. I just don't want to read her. I just don't like that we let her win. I just can't.
Yeah, it is a really difficult chapter here, especially at the end, because, you know, we get the win for Gryffindor, which is great, and, you know, we're excited about that. And the I think what's so frustrating about this is it's the complete partisanship that we get, right? Where Umbridge is clearly on the side of the Slytherins. She's clearly on the side of basically evil, and she's doing all she can to make life, you know, awful for everyone that's not on her side. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that this book does so well is to show how dangerous that is. Look, there are times when we must pick a side, but when we start parsing people out like this is just wrong. And they do such a good job, and Rowling does such a good job of showing the difference between the two. Like, the appropriately choosing a side and the one that just alienates people for no good reason.
I don't know. I personally have such a hard time with this because I'm such a fan. Like, not fan. That's such a terrible way to put it. I'm a fan. I have this very weird, like, I'm a rule follower. I'm a Hermione, right? It's really hard for me to see injustice or something that's just straight up not fair happening and be like, oh, it's okay. Or they'll get theirs. Like, and especially with people in the place of authority, either in the books or in movies or in real life. Like, that is really something that gets under my skin and gets me super worked up. And someone once described it as I'm the person who'll go on a rooftop and shout injustice. I'll just scream it from the rooftops. And so this book makes me want to get on a rooftop and scream. So it's really, really hard for me to read these chapters because of that. So I appreciate everyone going through this with me because it's really hard for me.
I mean, it's difficult for me too, because there is that skin crawling nature to what she's doing here. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of her as a writer, that she's able to do this, you know, she's sure. able to make us feel so uncomfortable with people being treated like this. And she does it so well with a variety of different types of people too. And we see it across the spectrum. And I think that's what makes it really important. So,
totally, for sure, 1,000%. You've totally nailed it. It doesn't make me any less all worked up, though.
Oh no,
I got all worked up.
All worked up. Ba-do-do, ba-do-do,
something like that.
Something
yeah.
like that. I'm all worked up. Anyway, regardless of my bad Elvis impersonation, we've got the next chapter, which is going to be Hagrid's tale, where we finally hear what Hagrid's been up to, and we finally get him, which is going to be great. But before we do that, we've got to end this episode, and you'll have to wait till next time. Drea, where can everybody find you if they maybe want to commiserate a little bit?
If you want to come shout off the rooftops with me about how much you hate Umbridge, you can find me on Twitter at PCFcheck or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd under the name MattRushing02. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk all about Star Wars each and every week. It's a lot of fun, so make sure you check that out. I'm on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The other is the General Geek Show that I do with my good friend Christy, and that's where we talk about all the fandoms we love. There's just so many out there, so check that out. If you know, like genre-type things, the 602 Club is the place for you. And then last but not least, I'm doing a show with my other friend Courtney, and that's where we talk about films, but through the lens of faith, and that is called Cinema Stories. But we do want to thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.